Yes, yes, yes. Oh, golly gosh, that was great. How was it for you?
Yeah, very pleasant, thank you, madam, but it wasn't quite what I meant when I said I was granting you a quickie. Thank you and welcome to the show. Yes, the show that does for the news what Nick Faldo did for Greg Norman. But what a week it's been, eh? The Tories recoiled from their by-election defeat. Princess Alexandra's daughter split from her husband. Call Girl Divine went on the run. And laxative manufacturers held a national constipation day. So it's been smarting, parting, tarting and... far be it from me to comment, but there we are. Oh, and the Labour leader has been in Washington hobnobbing with the American president. Tony Blair did the hobbing and Bill Clinton did the introductions. Meanwhile, John Prescott said he is no longer working class, but thinks of himself as middle class. He's so posh now he doesn't put his coal in the bath anymore. He puts it in the bidet. In the drawing room. And I hear that they're going to build a 500-foot Ferris wheel opposite the Houses of Parliament. That's a good idea, eh? Having a fun fair opposite a circus. Good. Prince Edward said the idea of a rigid class system in this country is codswallop. Yes, this is from someone who has real soldiers with his boiled eggs in the morning. Last weekend, 2.5 billion viewers from 200 countries watched Billy Graham on television. Well, it was Shane Ritchie on the other side, so... Oh, and the man who invented the milk carton has been named as the man with the most money in Britain for the third year running. That's because he can't get his wallet open to spend any of it. Some sad news now. The fellow who wrote the Hokey Cokey has died. Yes, the Undertaker's had problems getting him in the coffin, though. Every time they put his left leg in, it kept popping up. And among the dafter stories of the week, I see a woman who lives on horse meat says it's done wonders for her sex life. Yes, her husband only has to show her the flag and they're off. Abroad again in Austria, they're planning Europe-wide hiking tours for nudists. Yes, and you thought those dangling frying pans were a menace, didn't you? One of the daftest stories of the week was that bloke who was locked up for having sex with pavements. Yeah. He's been jailed again, you know, for having sex with plastic bin liners. Yeah. Well, at least he's taking precautions now. Little picture gag, don't worry about it. But the silliest story of the week must be that fella. He's a male stripper who draws different expressions on his wedding tackle as part of his act. He's always moonlighting, old Cleggy, you know. He really is. He was arrested the other day. Mind you, he did manage to put a brave face on it. Pull. Pull. Right, old girl, that's the holes put in the donuts. Now, how are you getting on?
68, 69, 70. All the candles are in one's cape.
Good. Better warn Lloyd's before you light it. We don't want another fire on our hands, do we? Now, where's that sherry to put in the trifle? Oh, God. I might have known inside Margaret. God, and now Margaret's inside the trifle.
Oh, dear. We've got spots before our eyes. Oh,
somebody clean the hundreds and thousands off her glasses, will they? So, old girl, your 70th birthday, eh?
Yes, and we do seem to be getting plenty of cards and parcels. Oh, what shall we do with these ones from Diana and Sarah?
Put them in a bucket of water till they stop ticking, I will. You're quite sure you don't want to see those two at the party?
Philip, the only place I want to see those two is in the Tower of London. They and their gentlemen friends.
Oh, you'd need to build an extension for that lot anyway. Still, no chance of them getting in. I've tightened security. Oh, blast. William's teeth have set off the metal detectors again. Look, we'll just have a small party. All the people you're not talking to. It couldn't be a big one, could it?
Quite. One has decided that one wants just a discreet, intimate family gathering.
Bally family's no trouble being intimate. It's just getting the Blighters to be blasted discreet about it. You ask me, the whole thing would go better without any of them. Especially the other fellow.
Hi there, Daddy-o, Mummy-o.
Oh, Charles, dear.
Love, peace, and salutations to swinging sexagenarians.
Oh, thank you, dear. Own a card, too. With best wishes on your retirement from Charles.
And is this your new name here, boy? Charles the Third? Or is it just rhyming slang? I don't know.
Philip, thank you, Charles. One sure the thought was there.
Yes, and I know what thought it bally was. Listen, boy, your mother's not ready for the woolly crown and pension queue yet, you know.
Cosmic drag, man, but surely when one feels old age creeping up on one...
Look, what you get up to with Camilla's your own business now. Look, we don't want anyone at this party who might create a scene, be rude and upset people.
Yes, your father's going to do all that.
Yes. It'll just be family members behaving in a quiet, civilized fashion.
Oh, Walter! Walter, oh! Everything ready for the P-A-R-R-T-Y. Oh, really, Mummy, we are not a child. You don't have to keep it a secret from one. No, not from you, Lilybet. The servants. You knows what they'll want if they find out. Oh, not invitations. Oh, worse than that, dear. Overtime. It's not like when you was a Nicola, dear. Parties in the nursery with all them dollies. Mr. Spindley and Mr. Growler.
Oh, Mumsy's toys.
Chamberlain and Churchill, dear. One of them brought all the dollies.
Ah, yes. I always enjoyed Charles's birthday parties. Great fun.
Really? I don't remember them.
Oh, we didn't invite you, boy. That's what made them great. Ah, and the gifts, yes.
Yes, of course. All of Lilybet's birthday presents were special. Right from when she was knee-high to a guardsman. We give her a junior monarch's outfit, a course of waving lessons, and a stamp album so she could play Spot the Relatives. Not that she ever wears what we give her for her 13th.
What, earrings, a tiara?
Gas mask, dear. In fact, there's only one thing I ever regret giving her when she was 21. If we'd only known it had turned into this thing that had cost a packet and never worked properly.
Something you gave Liz in 47. Ah, you bally mean...
Yes, Phyllis Ann, that's when we gave her permission to marry you.
Oh, dear. Well, I read this week that Luciano Pavarotti's girlfriend can't stand opera. She only likes rock and roll, as long as he doesn't roll on her, of course. So, what sort of sweet nothings does Luciano croon into her ear? The headlines hid in Pavarotti's pajama case to find out.
We're gonna rock around the clock. We're dancing to the jailhouse rock, to anything you wanna do. But don't you step on my blue suede shoes, the blue suede shoes, the blue suede shoes.
I was standing in the hallway yesterday waiting for my Daily Mail to pop through the letterbox. You know, it's a, it's a nasty habit, and I've told him to stop doing it, but he'll only listen to it. And some fell on stony ground. But this week, a newspaper of the same name is regaling its readers with the story of how it all began nearly 100 years ago. The headline's as nosy as ever, climbed into a time machine, pressed reverse, and headed backwards to April 1895.
London, Victorian England. The streets are bustling with horse-drawn hansom cabs.
South of the river, not bleeding likely, lady.
Street traders on every corner selling their wares.
Hello, dearie. Fancy a short time with a naughty girl?
I've only got a halfpenny bit.
Oh, that's all right, Dux. I got change.
Yes, that joke was old even then. And at 221B Baker Street, the great private detective Sherlock Holmes is wrestling with a particularly knotty problem.
Damn, damn, damn.
What is it, Holmes?
The bonus ball has let me down again. I was just one off the jackpot prize of 10 guineas.
I don't know why you waste your time on these puerile newspaper competitions, Holmes. Now, when that new organ, the Daily Mail, appears on the streets, things will change for the better. No more gutter reporting then. I mean, Holmes, look, look at this story on page 7 of the Evening Strumpet. The twilight assignations of Oscar Wilde and the Rent Boy. I mean, the poor chap's in prison, for God's sake. Why don't they leave well alone?
You've got a lot to say, haven't you, Watson?
Well, you know what I'm like when I get my dander.
Yes, I do indeed, yes. Puts me right off me fiddle playing, I can promise you that.
I mean, where are the royal stories in here? What news of our dear old queen?
You just said the poor chap's in prison. I'll ring Mrs. Hudson for some refreshment.
Oh, blow her.
Oh, come, come, Watson. The poor woman does her best, I promise you.
On the speaking tube, Holmes. Ah. Blow for her attention.
Oh, you know how I hate these newfangled gadgets. However, if it pleases you...
What is it, Mr. Holmes?
How did you know it was me?
I can smell the garlic on your breath.
Ah. Bring us up a pot of tea for three and a plate of opium, Mrs. Hudson, please.
Very good, Mr. Holmes.
Thank you.
Oh, there's a gentleman from the press to see you. Shall I send him up?
No, treat him with the utmost respect. We do the sending up on this show.
Daft pillock.
That woman leaves much to be desired in matters of etiquette, Watson.
I wonder who the gentleman from the press can be.
None other than the proprietor of the Daily Mail, one Alfred Harmsworth, soon to become Viscount Northcliffe, which is why I ordered tea for three.
My word, Holmes, how did you deduce all that?
Is Michael Barrymore straight? I think you'd better retire to your chambers before Harmsworth gets here.
Why?
Because you'll be playing him, and we don't want to confuse the listeners, do we?
Oh, very well. I shall attend to my duties at the hospital. They've just had 2 cases of scrofula come in.
Oh, good. All together now, it'll make a change from the Beaujolais, won't it? Too late. He's here. Come in.
Here's your tea, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, dear.
The finest black sang souchong diffused for precisely 3.5 minutes in a warmed-up china pot at 98.4 degrees centigrade. Oh, and I've rolled you a couple of spliffs.
Thank you, Mrs. Hudson. You're a treasure. Remind me to bury you in the garden later. And this 6-foot blonde-haired, blue-eyed Adonis... must be Alfred Harmsworth.
Charmed, Mr. Holmes.
You really do have to use your imagination on radio, don't you? And this... this one who looks rather more like Chris Emmett is my colleague, Dr. John Watson.
Delighted, Dr. Watson. Oh, think nothing of it, old chap.
You'll take tea with us, Harmsworth?
Not for me, thank you, but I'll have a spliff if there's one there. By Jove, sir, you are a cad and a bounder. I thought your organ stood up for family values.
I say steady on, Watson.
I'm dashed if I will.
You'll be dashed if you don't, I promise you. We'll have to play smack potties with my Stradivarius bow if you don't behave yourself.
Oh.
All right, stop that. Excuse Mrs. Hudson, your turn, I believe.
Excuse me.
Sorry, let me put it this way. Ah, oh, that's better.
Put it away, Mr. Hudson. Excuse me, is there anything else, Mr. Holmes?
Are you still here? No, thank you, Mrs. Hudson. You can go about your business.
Oh, very well. I'll put some ointment on my varicose veins.
Good luck,
though, yes. Dr. Watson here reckons it's cellulite.
No doubt you're wondering why I'm here, Holmes.
You wish to put my brilliant deductive talents to good use as an investigative journalist for your new broadsheet.
My word, Holmes, nothing escapes you, does it?
Very little. Although after a plate of mushy peas, I have to confess
Yes, that's all very well.
The Great Escape, yes.
If I may butt in.
Sorry about that,
Mr. Holmes.
Yes.
Mr. Holmes.
Are you Watson?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Trying hard to be, yes. If I may butt in here, Hunter.
Yes.
Mr. Holmes has little time for such matters. His detection work uses up most of his energies.
There is another reason why it would not be prudent to employ my services.
What's that, Holmes?
I'm a fictional character.
Ah.
Yes, you see. Thus, by that criteria, anything I write for your newspaper will be pure fiction.
Oh, dear. That does pose a problem.
Wait. I have a solution. It's perfect. I will work for you.
Oh, splendid. And I won't end up with a newspaper full of wild fancies and fabricated untruths.
Oh, yes, but you simply change the name of your paper to The Sun. I was reading about Edward Windsor this week, you know, the television producer formerly known as Prince. Apparently, he thinks we're now a classless society because any fool can be a media executive, even if he lives at Buckhouse. But...
Roy! Roy, lovely surprise. Super to see you. Mwah. Although it's true one's living at the palace, one's very poor, one hasn't got a bean. So it could be said one passes for one of the middle classes, if one wasn't a relation of the Queen.
That was an evening with Edward Windsor. Next. Mr. Friggins.
Is I?
Yes. And what can I do for you this time? I hadn't expected to see you back so soon.
Well, that's just it, Doctor. I've been in training, you see. Oh. I'm a lot faster on my feet now.
If memory serves, it's not your feet I have to worry about, so... What's the trouble?
Well, Doctor, I read that those tight-fitting Lycra shorts that us athletes wear can be harmful to your health, see?
Yes.
Anyway, I was wearing them yesterday during a rigorous workout to improve my lower body tone.
Yes.
And when I woke up this morning, this had happened.
Good. Good Lord. Tell me, were you by any chance practicing the pole vault?
No, why do you ask?
Oh, no reason, no. My word, talk about athlete's foot.
Yes, that's about the size
of it. And some, I would say, Mr. Friggins. And some.
Can you help me, Doctor? I'm worried this could seriously affect my personal best.
Looks like it already has, I tell you. Call me old-fashioned, but I better take another look. Hey, you know, you could be another Linford Christie. You really could. That was easily as fast as him, is it?
I'm worried, Doctor. Is it contagious? I mean, could I pass this on to anyone else?
Only if you get confused in the relay, Mr. Friggin.
Well, what about my best event?
Ah, yes.
Can I still go in for that?
Well, I know I shouldn't ask, really, but what is your best event?
The triple jump.
Yes, I thought it. No, Mr. Friggins, it's best to limit it to a single jump once in a while.
Right you are.
Now then, one last look before I prescribe something. Good God, it looks like Fatima Whitbread in a stocking mask. It really does. But I've got good news, Mr. Friggins.
Oh?
Yes, I can treat this by using the same drugs other athletes sometimes use illegally.
Oh, steroids, eh? Tell me, Doctor, what sort of steroids would be best for me, then?
Well, it's obvious, Mr. Friggins. Anabolics. And after nearly 10 years of marriage, the Duke and Duchess of York are to be divorced. Oh, just think of it, eh? 10 years. That's nearly 500 foreign holidays, isn't it? Seriously, it's hard to think of them as single people again. I mean, have you seen the size of both of them? Of course, this would have to happen in the same week as the Church of England announced plans for a divorce ceremony to bless couples who are splitting up. It makes you wonder what sort of glittering pomp and spectacle a royal divorce might turn out to be.
And here comes the royal bride-to-be-chucked now. Her dress draws stunned gasps from the crowd, as it still has the price tag on it. Not that she paid anything, mind you. And behind her, we see the traditional train of attendants. Yes, racing drivers, Texas oil millionaires, tennis players, all holding up her dress to get a better look at those famous legs. And she makes her way down the aisle, having been upgraded to first class. Prince Andrew is at the altar, being given moral support by the best man in his firm of solicitors. And a hush descends as this beautiful ceremony begins.
Dearly expensive, we are gathered here today in the sight of God and the Almighty Trinity, GMTV, Hello Magazine and Fleet Street, to separate this man and this woman in the state of acrimony. Sarah and Andrew, are you willing to enter into this broken marriage?
We are.
Who gives this woman away?
Well, the Daily Mirror photographers mainly.
Yeah. Do you, Andrew, take Sarah to be your awful ex-wife?
I do.
And do you, Sarah, take Andrew for 2 million knicker?
I do.
Who has the ring?
I have.
Well, give it back at once, you vulgar gold digger.
Thank you.
By the giving of a ring, these two persons have now entered into a state of alimony. What God hath joined together, no man may put asunder, although three or four might manage it. Now, do you both promise to remain apart for bitter, for worse, for bittier, for poorer, till deaths you do part?
We do.
Now, if anyone here present knows of any reason why these two should not be separated, let him come forward or forever hold his peace.
I wouldn't mind doing that.
Andrew and Sarah. The woman's an animal. Andrew and Sarah, I now pronounce you man and strife. You may now kiss and tell.
And to relieve cheers from the crowd of legal advisors, royal columnists, and children's book publishers, the royal ex-couple make their separate ways from the altar to scenes of unrestrained delight.
Well done, darling. Where's my gun? I'll get rid of
it. What a stirring spectacle. Once again, the Windsors have shown the world that the royal family that stays together is a rare exception indeed.
Well, apparently the government wants to teach money management as part of the national curriculum. The idea is that when school leavers don't get jobs, they can survive by investing in personal pensions. I wonder where they're supposed to get the money to invest in the first place, don't you? A long time ago when Britain still was great, before they messed up the good old welfare state, when nobody had to worry where national insurance went, the children were in no hurry to grow up and pay the rent. For kids today there's no more time for having fun, too busy learning to look after number one. That's what we must aim for, even though it seems a shame, for now we have to teach our kids making a living. Stocks and shares take over bids, making a living. Goodbye to bikes and ball games and trees and ponds. Hello to tax-efficient investment bonds. Innocence and childhood are old-fashioned fancies. They won't get you very far. Stick to finances. Be sure your savings grow more. Life has no more to give. If you're making a living, at least you'll live.
And finally, Stop Press.
A Manchester United supporter now takes a change of clothes with him whenever he goes to a disco.
Yes, if he hasn't scored after 45 minutes, he changes his shirt, you know.
A device has been invented that flashes a green light when it's safe for a woman to have sex.
And it flashes a red one when her old man's coming up the garden path.
Fast food outlets have started selling ostrich meat.
The trouble is you don't get many legs in a bargain bucket.
Laxative manufacturers organised lots of activities to celebrate National Constipation Day on Tuesday.
I didn't feel like going.
The number of men suffering from impotence is on the rise.
Isn't that a contradiction in terms?
A French artist is hiring himself out as various pieces of furniture.
The man's a poof.
A Mr. Tie is to marry a Miss Knot.
Yeah. Let's hope there aren't any last-minute hitches.
Police have been given special advice on how to strip search suspected transvestites.
Well, some of them have ended up feeling plonkers, you see.
And that's the end of the Stop Press.
But I'll be back next week unless I'm named in Fergie and Andy's divorce. Ta-da for now!
News Headline starring Roy Hudd, Chris Emmett and June Whitfield with Peter Marston, the headliners. The announcer was Richard Clegg. Sketches were by Mike Common, Michael Dines, Jed Parsons, Tony Hare, Peter Hickey, Richard Stoneman and Ben Warden, Dave Lamb, Mark Brissenden, Stephen Sheridan and Alexa Topaniuk, Stuart Curry and J.A. Barham, with songs by Richard Quick and Jeremy Brown. Additional lines by J.A. Sinden, Glenn Mitchell, Tim Mallinson, Sandra Hardingham, Jim Luff, James McConaughey, Phil Rosen, Jennifer Spriggs, Paul Elder-Gill, Ron Pritchard, Paul Harrison and Brian Sykes, Jerry Godin, Pete Sargent, Dennis McHale, John Finch, Noel Reed, Ian Searle, Jim Mulholland and Jim Ward, Jim Bond and Roger Minty, and Richard Mumford.
All of whom are holding up two carrots to our producer,
Phil Balka.
Ah, good afternoon. I'm from the Health and Safety Council and we're randomly calling mobile phone numbers to ask users like yourself if it's true that constant use of them can affect your brain. Would you like to comment on this?